Welcome to issue 2 of License to Queer Presents James Bond's Comic Book Capers.
You almost forgot the title then, didn't you?
I have almost forgot to credit License to Queer, but here I am. So if you're new, we've done 2 episodes already, an episode 0 and episode 1, and we are tackling the James Bond comic book adaptations from Dynamite Entertainment in the order that they came out. Issue 0 is me talking about James Bond's history in the comic book format, and episode 1 is the first of the Warren Ellis master issues arcs, which is Varga, which we reviewed on the last show. I am your host, Anthony Lowbridge Ellis, and I, of course, am joined, as always, by my husband.
The sidekick. The...
Yeah, you're the sidekick. I'm, you're like the bookie Money to Penny, my Captain America.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. And this month, we are reading Edelon.
I think. Edelon. I mean, what is it with Warren Ellis, an unpronounceable title?
Edelon because I said mentioned it last time, but Edelon is a product we use at work. Like, you paint it on rails.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that's why I keep saying Edelon. Because that when I see those
stop
letters,
stop it! You're making me excited with all this train terminology.
Tram.
We've got trains in this comic book. And I think I'm pronouncing it correctly. It's actually from Greek mythology.
Yeah, it's like Edelon, it means spectre.
Like a spirit, like a phantom, aka spectre. I wonder where this is going.
Yeah, it's a second and thankfully last of the Warren Ellis arcs. They do get good. Guys, we promise. You can read along with us.
Can I just clarify that? Do these comic books get good?
Yeah, I think so. I think the next one's really good, actually, Hammerhead.
Have you read the next one already?
I think I'd have, yeah. And another Felix Leiter
one. I read the Felix Leiter one, so I know that one's good. So that's the fourth arc.
And there's also some like one-offs with Moneypenny and stuff. So they do get good.
So you know I hate being...
I don't think this is bad, though.
You know I hate being negative.
Yeah.
So I'm really gonna try not to, I'm trying to emphasize the positives here, but I had massive problems with this 6-issue arc.
So this is another 6-issue arc. So this is issue 7 to 11 of the original James Bond run. Obviously, as I mentioned last time, they renumber comics quite often, so people buy them again. This one was published between June and December 2016,
mm-hmm.
And is the same team of Warren Ellis writing, Jason Masters on art, and also the same colorist, something Majors, forget what his first name is, but and again published by Dynamite Comics. Warren Ellis will leave this book now, and he'll be replaced by a new creative team. Doing a new arc. We talked all about the reasons why Dynamite might do this. I think it's a good move in terms of comic book sales, marketing, so that's really good. And also, just before, because we're not going to get into it again, an issue 1 of this podcast where we talk about Varga, we also went into the problematic nature of Warren Ellis as a creator because of the, which he's admitted are verified accusations against him and coercive behaviour. So we're not going to mention that again. But if you want to know more about that before you dive into reading these books, listen to issue 1 of this podcast where we'll talk about that. But we review these books in the same way we review things on the License to Queer review system. So we're going to talk about James, we're going to talk about villains, we're going to talk about girls, we're going to talk about allies, we're going to talk about the story, the caper, and we're also going to talk about writing and art because it is a comic book format. So which one of those do you want to start with? Do you want to talk about what the story is, the caper?
I think it's worth doing that. So lots of people listening to this will have already read this comic series a while back, because this was 2016, this was released, I think is quite significant for some of the things we're going to say as well. About right near the end, I was like, when was this released? So people have had about 8 years to have actually read this comic book. So I think we're just going to spoil the whole thing today.
Yeah, we will.
So if you've not read it and you want to read it, and there are some good things about it, don't let my initial negativity put you off. You know, I still had a decent-ish time while I was steaming through the 6 issues about half an hour ago. But go and read those comic books if you want to, because we are going to basically give everything away.
And if you're wanting to read them in a way that is inexpensive, as I mentioned on the live we did this week, if you subscribe to Kindle Unlimited, quite a lot of the Dynamite James Bond stuff are on there as part of your subscription, and so you can read them on tablets and stuff like that without having to pay additional costs.
Do you want to rattle through the story?
Yeah, so essentially, James is in Los Angeles to lift an agent who is an accountant, and she's been undercover in the Turkish consulate, and her cover has been blown. So James grabs her, and then he's set upon by some Turkish agents who seem to have been armed by the CIA. She's a forensic accountant. Her name is Cadence Birdwhistle, and she's a forensic accountant, and she's found that money's been moved from Turkish Secret Services bank accounts to another to a British shell company under the name of Edelon, and James saves the agent, and she and him are about to fly back to the UK, and then they can't get out of the country because there's been a attack at the airport. So they have to stay the night, and this is where there's sexy time, but we don't see it. And
involving belts.
I think bondage. And then because of the things that happened in the previous arc, James is got no weapons when he's like, he threw his weapons away because he thought he was going back to England and he wasn't allowed to bring weapons on English soil. And so he doesn't have his weapons. They go back to the airport the next day, and then they get attacked by two CIA agents who Bond kills in the lift to save him and Cadence. When they finally get to England, he gets a text from Felix to say that they weren't CIA agents that he was aware of. And then we start to realise that all the different spy agencies potentially have been infiltrated by some rogue agents. As they're leaving the airport in the UK, Bond and Cadence get attacked again, this time by people with MI5 SAS sort of weaponry. There's some exposition by Tanner and M, who realise that this sort of shadowy organisation, which seems to be like modelling itself on Spectre, is being run out of an underground facility in MI5, where there's steam trains for some reason, they're using all the embezzled cash.
I've got a contextual footnote for that when we come back to it.
And James has to go and break in to investigate this facility, which is breaking UK law, because James shouldn't be investigating stuff on home soil. We then get introduced, James gets introduced properly to the villain, who's a former war hero called Beckett Hawkwood. Again, similar things to other Bond villains. It's a trope of him being disfigured, and that's why he's evil. He's a former SAS spy who, when he sort of got attacked and blown up in a war, he was unable to be a spy anymore because of his facial disfigurements. He stood out in the crowd. You don't learn his full name till issue 10. He's also being helped by his like right-hand man, who's another MI5 spy called Gareth Cullen. Bond kidnaps him and then proceeds to torture him with Tanner, which is really weird.
So Bond and Tanner torturing someone. Yeah. We'll come back to that as well.
They get some information out of him to show that there's this the person who's in charge of MI5, who is Sir Stephen McMaine, is the head of this Edelon cell. And M gets called to a meeting to the person who's in charge of like doing this review of the Secret Service, with MI5 and him in attendance. By this point, James has also befriended Eve Sharma, who's an MI5 agent who's crossed the road to help MI6. Although we don't know that at this point, we think she's a bit, think she could be suspicious. They go to this like country house style thing, and it turns out to be a trap, and they're going to MI5 are going to kill M, but M is protected because he has Moneypenny with him, who's a badass with a gun, and he's like security detail in this.
Favorite part of this whole run,
and also that other woman Eve, which is confusing because we think Eve Moneypenny,
yeah.
She's also able to help save the day as well. James chases, James kills the head of MI5. He paralyzed him first so they could bring him in for questioning, but then James just decides to shoot him and kill him.
Yes.
And then they chase down the villain, who's Beckett Hawkwood. Now, earlier in the issue, at the very start, it starts with Beckett, and you don't know much about him, but it makes it sound like he's the head of Edelon, but at the very end of the issue, it turns out that he's just doing it to get paid. So it made no sense at the very end. So, like the last arc, it all fell apart very at the very end. It ended very suddenly, and then James, because this man is a former veteran, James chases him down and then gives him the opportunity to kill himself, or James will take him in and he'll have his whole sort of war hero backstory ruined. So the man decides to slit his own throat, and then he says, just tell the government they should look after veterans more, or something to that thing. And James goes, no, as like he dies.
So that ending is a horrible version of the ending of Octopussy, the short story, where Bond allows someone who's been a traitor to kill themselves, essentially. Yeah. But doesn't leave a foul aftertaste in your mouth like this one does.
Well, for me, it wasn't so much that. It was, for me, it was the fact that, like, earlier on, we thought that he was a big bad because he was, like, he killed that accountant at the very start and said to him, like, don't use my name out loud and all that kind of stuff. But at the end, it turns out, actually, he's not the big brains of the organisation.
There are so many plot holes in this caper. Let's deal with the plot. Let's deal with the plot.
Yeah, I don't think it's a... I think there's a good story there about like two or three. Apparently, what's happening is there's like four rogue agents in each Secret Service, and they've created this Edelon.
Cells of four.
Yes, and that's a really cool idea. But we you only see a few people.
Yeah,
and it gets so muddled by the end. You don't know what his.
Okay, the biggest plot flaw for me, which I don't know, might be true to life, and it is a Bondian thing to identify people by their guns. Yeah. But basically, all of these people give themselves away. I know they think they're going to kill Bond, so they won't be identified, but they all give themselves away by having the signature weapons of that, their security services, which is so shockingly stupid.
Why would they all have those? Why would you have a set gun?
Well, that does exist. So the SAS, for instance, are only identified by this particular kind of
weaponry. And the Americans have the Glocks.
The Americans have the Glocks and all that. That is true to life, but if you were really trying to be really cautious and cover your tracks, like this Edelon, you know, kind of Shadow of Spectre, is intended to be this big bad that's been there for God knows how long after Spectre, you know, went. Well, I presume, timeline-wise, this is following... It's quite a bit weird, isn't it? This is why I asked you for the year, because this follows Spectre the film.
Yeah.
But we know that this is Ian Fleming's James Bond character.
The only thing that I think is if, and I don't think it'd come out by this point, but I don't know whether like there was supposed to be another Warren Ellis. I don't know, because they already started advertising Hammerhead. But I don't know if originally he had planned for a large arc, because it feels like they're setting something up. And then obviously he goes now.
Presuming this is Fleming's Bond still, because there are explicit things in it, like Felix Leiter having prosthetic limbs.
Because of the shark.
Because of the shark attack from Live and Let Die, the novel. Which obviously doesn't happen until License to Kill the film.
And also, there's some bits, there's aspects where it's like the cinema Bond as well.
Exactly.
Like Moneypenny. But she's not called Eve, though.
I know.
Because that'd be really weird.
Yeah, we can... It's fine. You can kind of... You know, I always say Bond is like a palimpsest. You can always see previous versions showing through. But this is explicitly supposed to be Fleming's Bond. This is created with the Fleming
of that.
This is Ian Fleming Publications licensed.
Yeah, and like I found it very Fleming when like Bond was quite sort of rude is too strong a word, but quite I didn't appreciate being in America.
Okay, so that is a bit of a Fleming thing as well.
Yeah.
So Bond's snobbery towards America, but also his adoration of lots of American things. So you
like
don't
a bourbon.
You don't get them. Yeah. You do sort of get that aspect of snobbery, but again, like we had in the first arc, and probably even more exaggerated in this one, I feel like Warren Ellis doesn't really know James Bond, Ian Fleming's James Bond stories and why they work. Mm. We've got the superficial elements of the character, and we'll come to the character in more detail in a moment. But for me, the plot is the biggest problem.
Yeah, me too.
It doesn't end. So at their core, I know lots of people might balk at this, but if you really know your Fleming, you know that Fleming's stories are...
I think there's an aspect of the Fleming thing that it feels very Fleming at the beginning, like it's an accountant that sees a weird file named something and
it grows into something much bigger. So there's Fleming elements, but the endings are the problem. So the whole point of a James Bond story is that James Bond goes, you know, St. George and the Dragon. Mm. Archetypally, that's what a James Bond story is. It's an overcoming the monster story most of the time. He overcomes a monster, but it's a bit of a damp squib in both of these arcs.
Because
and also, he doesn't get the princess.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
He has sex with two women, but you don't see...
But the whole point, Kingsley Amis pointed this out, and subsequently lots of other people have pointed this out. I think Fleming himself pointed it out.
It ends with
the whole point is that Bond goes through...
I've not thought about that. It ends... Both of these capers end with him finishing the mission and doing the job, not the bit where, like... He's attempting re-entry.
Exactly. Where's that part? Which even the books do.
Yeah. No, I never
most of the books... Okay, so with the exception of a couple of the books and two of the films, all of the Bond stories end in that way.
Yeah. And I think... And even if it's a heartbreaking one, like in Moonraker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Warren Ellis, in both of these, writes James Bond like an action man.
Yes.
And it's like a toy figure.
It makes me realise how close we've probably come to disaster in the film series sometimes when there's been a temptation to follow popular trends.
Mm.
And I know that, you know, it's some of the Craig moves are inflected with Jason Bourne and all that kind of thing. But it's only inflections. They don't really shift the narrative. If they did, and we ended up with that, you know, probably the most extreme example is *License to Kill*, where Bond is feels like a very different story, but that story is still so dripping in Fleming that that's a bit of a disgusting phrase, but you get what I mean. So, for me, it didn't feel like a Bond story by the end.
No, me neither.
And even more so than the previous one.
Yeah, I agree, because at least the other one was like. It was very international. This one ended in England, which is fine. Ended in England in a car chase. And yes, they were trying to blow up MI6, but I've seen them do that in their stuff, so it didn't feel new
and
for me.
It was far too over-familiar. So the whole plot by the end was to set off a bomb to destroy the MI6 headquarters.
Yeah.
So it's
it wasn't. They were going to blow up Parliament.
Yeah,
MI6 was...
That's happened three times in the Eon film series on screen.
Yeah.
So it felt very, very overly familiar to me.
Yeah. As we're talking about the story, let's go straight into the writing. There's a few funny one-liners and there's some like good action scenes that are plotted. I like particularly the fight in the lift. I thought it was quite... fun. Again, it felt familiar, something we'd seen before, which makes it feel like Bond, because we've seen him fight in a lift. I like that chase through, I thought it was quite funny, that chase through a little English country town.
Yeah.
And like the joke where later on, when Bond has a car crash, the first time he has a car crash, he's encumbered by the airbags. Second time he has the airbags doesn't come off. Like, that was funny. But my main problem with the writing is quite how violent Bond is still.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
like I mentioned at the end, they've got this person who is like the head of MI5, who has been revealed to be a spy, and that you could read it as, but this isn't given as an explanation, you could read it as the fact that the British people would be so shook by that coming out that it's better for Bond to kill him, and so it never does come out. But M doesn't give him that instruction, and so it feels a bit weird when that man's paralysed on the floor. They can take him in, but Bond just decides to kill him in cold blood.
So again, this feels very familiar, because in Spectre, you have C, played by Andrew Scott, who, I mean, if you compare his death, so he basically falls through death after trying to kill M.
Yeah.
So compare that with this, and I know... I think you said on the last, for the last one, that it's a comic book, so you can kind of expect, you know, violence to be treated in a different way. But again, and I think it's really useful me reading these comics, because it makes me realise what a James Bond story isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is almost like a non-example of a James Bond story for me. This did not, apart from a few character moments, and there are a couple of bits we'll come to in a bit, apart from a few character moments, it just never feels like a Bond story.
There's certain things that didn't happen, and I expected them to. Like, I thought that Cadence would be revealed to be a baddie.
Yeah, same.
Because there's that weird bit where, in the writing, where she... One minute she says that she almost got killed twice, and then she says, like, two pages later, oh, yeah, I almost got killed three times for this. And then someone goes, three times, and that never gets... And I thought that was going to be her a villain.
I know. I don't know if that was just a mistake or what.
Or I don't know if that she was, like... Was she saying that because she knew it was about to turn into a gunfight, because she knew what the plan was?
I don't know. I thought, I didn't understand
And also the fact that, like, her name is Bird Whistle, and the villain's name is Hawk... Hawkwood. I thought that was setting it up that she was a villain.
Good point. Yeah.
So, shall we go on and talk about James Bond?
Oh, let's.
Seen as it is his thing.
Allegedly, this is a James Bond story.
There were some aspects which I thought were very James. He's shown a bit snobby. He's
but it's all those materialism. Superficial things. So it's like...
He's quite witty in scenes with the women.
There was one bit that made me laugh aloud, but then I felt really bad for laughing aloud about it. And it was almost like something you might find in a bit more of a, I don't know, like a Deadpool comic or something. So Cadence... And then I think it's in the first issue, if not the second issue. So says you're going to leave a loaded gun in a bin because Bond obviously can't take his gun back to the UK. And then Bond says, it's America. I don't have time to give it to a child or a mentally ill person. So I'm leaving it in a bin for them to find. And I laughed because I thought that's just quite a shocking thing to say. So it was almost like embarrassed laughter.
It's a comment about America's lax gun laws. That's what he's talking about.
Yeah.
But also, but throughout the... But the thing is, the thing where, like, that works but then doesn't, is good throughout both this and the first arc, James is a gun nut.
Oh, he's an absolute gun nut, the whole thing. I mean, I think it's quite telling that Q in this...
I like the Q scene. Okay, that was funny.
Q is actually Major Boothroyd, the real Major Boothroyd. But he's drawn as Major Boothroyd.
But I think he gives the vibe of, like, R from the Bruce Brosnan films.
I'm sure most people listening to this know who Major Boothroyd was, the guy who pointed out to Fleming that Bond shouldn't be using a Beretta because it's a lady's gun.
Yeah.
Which comes back in this story here.
Yeah.
But then Q's main purpose here is basically to give him a Wild West gun. So he literally gives him a Cattleman revolver from 1873.
And then he moans later that it doesn't shoot properly.
Yeah. And then that's just to basically put James Bond in a Wild West-esque scenario with steam trains.
But the other thing I don't understand is that why... Because he's... I know it's an admission that M says if he gets caught, he's going to be disavowed. But, like, they're not supposed to have weapons, so why is he giving him all the... And he gives him loads of grenades as well. Like, he kills loads of these men by blowing them up with grenades.
Yeah, subtle. So... There is again a reference to Bond's girly gun. We talked about this in Vagara, didn't we? Because there were lots of references. Yeah, there were lots of references to the size of Bond's gun, and Felix makes a gag about the size of his gun as well, his girly gun. And there's kind of a throwaway line which sort of says this is more Ian than it is Ian Fleming, because there's a reference to Q. So Q is never a character in Ian Fleming's books. He was in some of the subsequent continuation books. But that Q has at some point gone drinking at a jazz bar with Felix, which doesn't strike me as something that would ever happen, but hey-ho.
But he doesn't go with Felix, does he, when he goes to, like, a fillet of
No, no, not at all. But the big problem for me with Bond here is he's a psychopath.
Yeah, bloodlust.
Absolute psychopath. He's not a blunt instrument. He's actually, killing under orders. He is a psychopath.
The scene that I thought exemplified this the most is the torture scene, where him and Tanner are joking about using the man's skin as chamois to polish their car with.
Yeah. I mean, I actually thought, after that sequence, I thought, I didn't even recognise it was Bond and Tanner because of the scenario.
But then until the next scene where Tanner's like, I've still got blood in my nails.
So I read the whole page going, who are these new characters?
Yeah.
Because it was so not Bond and Tanner.
And then the next scene, they're drinking, and Tanner's like, I've got blood under my nails still. And then I realise, that was Bond. And...
It's absolutely gross. It's horrible.
And like...
They're slicing this man's flesh off and watching his blood drain down the chair.
And they joke about how much blood he's lost. Drain.
Bond never tortures people. Yeah, he'll twist people's arms and things like that.
Break their
and hold them at gunpoint. Yeah. But he doesn't torture people.
And it's not like torture just like, I'm going to like break your like, arm. It's cutting people's skin off.
It's like
you like Saw movies.
It is. It's horrendous.
Yeah, that's crazy. Although, have you got anything more to say about James?
Not really, no.
I like that he has, because the first arc was completely sexless. This one, he does have relationships with the women, but we don't see them. Like, he has some flirty banter with Cadence, who seems to be, like, a dominatrix, like, bondage person. And then the other girl, who is the MI5 agent, her name is Eve Sharma. They have, like, a sort of debrief in a cafe, and then they leave and decide to go to her place. Like, I just want, like, I know we don't... I just feel it's a bit weird that it's so sexless that you don't see the sex.
It's almost like I don't have a problem with us not seeing the sex per se, although that is a
key. But you see the violence so much.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, there's that double standard which I think is appalling.
Yeah.
There's no romance.
No.
And I've argued this many, many times, Fleming books work because they are partly structured as romance narratives.
Yeah, and like there's some funny banter about having to keep up appearances because they're in this like cover hotel as like a married couple. And there's some jokes about like, oh, you can sleep on the sofa, I'll sleep on the bed. And then she's like, order some belts from room service and some champagne. And like,
it's almost like women are there to be sex objects.
Which... With what we said last time.
With what we said no about the creator is possibly...
problematic, yeah.
I think it's fairly safe to say I won't be running out and buying lots of Warren Ellen comics.
Ellis.
What did I say?
Warren Ellen.
Who's Warren Ellen?
I don't know.
I've just created someone. So Warren Ellis comics, I don't think they're my cup of tea, do you?
And I didn't like his X-Men either, which I mentioned before, so like that. As we're talking about the sex, shall we move on to the girls?
Yes, because that's all they're here for.
We get two in this one. Cadence Birdwhistle, who is the accountant, secret agent person, who she does get quite a lot to do. She has to be saved by Bond frequently. Mm. Later on, she gets saved by Eve, so it's not all totally terrible. She's shown as this sort of bookish person with red hair who says really weird words like tinkle, I need to tinkle, like a toilet. And I thought that was so much of a ploy to make her seem all this innocent. And really, she was going to be the head honcho behind Edelon. Mm. But that isn't the case, and it's really weird. I really do think that that was the original plan and something
She's
happened.
Ultimately quite boring.
Nothing happens.
No.
So that's one girl. And then the other girl is Eve Sharma, who is literally just... a female gun.
Yes.
She has this... She she comes across first to appear as a red herring threat from MI5. She bursts into M's office and Moneypenny's going to shoot her. And later she saves them all on the attack on the mansion and gets herself run over by a car and injured, which was really like... which I was really confused when Bond runs to Moneypenny and goes, get Eve an ambulance. I'm like, Moneypenny isn't hurt.
I don't know why Warren Ellis decided to call her Eve. It's just really confusing.
Yeah. But yeah, she's just a female gun, basically. She gets nothing to do. And then she gets to have sex with James and we be think. Like the good MI5 person. But that's it, basically.
Yeah, that's about it.
So the women...
Not much more to say.
Like Varga, the women aren't
terrible.
Good. Unlike Varga, though, I think the allies are probably the best bit
possibly,
of this comic.
Yeah.
They do fall into that same trope at the begin with, where they use M and Tana as exposition.
Mm.
But then they get more stuff to do, and they introduce a little bit of a few other people. We get this female tech person who helps her with the fire. Obviously, we get the fun banter with Q and the stuff. Moneypenny's amazing in this arc. She gets to do loads of cool stuff. And, like, you realise she's not his PA, she's his security.
Bodyguard, yeah.
Yeah, and that's brilliant.
Which is a dynamic they could totally do in the films.
Yeah. And I like that reveal when he was like, sorry, you didn't come with security. And he's like, Moneypenny didn't drive me here. And then you get the reveal that he's there.
Because one of the things I hate about Skyfall is the way that Moneypenny... just takes the desk job.
Yeah. But that's the thing when they fix that inspector, when they sort of give her a bit more to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought they were really good, other than the thing that we mentioned about the terrible thing with Tana then deciding to be a torturer.
Just what? It's like Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs.
And then we've already mentioned Felix. Felix is in there. He's basically...
It was nice to have him as, like, the blonde Texan from the novels rather than the film.
Yeah, and we don't see anything of him, really, other than after that first scene, he sends Bond a text, and that's it, really.
Mm.
I think one thing I've realised with this, which we didn't think, and we'll have to see if this goes on, I think although they keep changing creative teams, there's an editor. The editor who edits the comic book line... is telling an overall story, and I think some of these things will carry on.
Okay.
Because it's the same, M and Moneypenny, the same ones now, in the current arc.
Yeah.
And that's the same Felix we see in the miniseries. And some of this stuff from the first Varga followed into this, and I reckon that some of these, how it's been left with MI5 being, like, taken down and being bad, what the rogue things, I reckon that will carry across into the next stories.
I just hope that in the next stories we actually get James Bond who's, you know, like James Bond.
Yeah, I think we will. Before we...
Villain.
Yeah, villain next. So there's three villains. Harkwood, who is the SAS sort of former soldier turned head of this group for some reason.
Which James Bond villain does that remind you of?
The one from...
And there's nothing wrong with having certain character types, but someone who basically feels betrayed by their country, she's going to rob them blind.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Javier Bardem, Silva.
Yeah, there's him. And?
Robert Carlyle's character.
I think you're mixing up actor. Alec Trevelyan.
Again, he's
a sort of Bond character type.
Mole.
But I didn't find him sufficient. You get no inner life of these people.
Yeah.
You don't know what's... You just said it's about Silver and Alec. You actually learn quite a bit about them and what sort of people they are.
And also, like, you get, like... He kills that man at the start, that accountant, because he uses his name.
Mm.
I was expecting that to be a big thing. But, like, he wants people to know his name because he's a war hero. Mm.
Someone who's that cautious still doesn't switch guns. To confuse the enemy. What is going on?
Yeah. He's the one. And then, like we've already mentioned, the other guy is really just in it to get captured and to be the second of the four. He's Gareth Cullen. He gets captured and tortured. That's him, basically. Then the main one is Sir Stephen Mac... Main, who's the head of MI5, who reveals that he's that. And then we're supposed to think that the fourth person in that cell was their security detail, which I was thinking there was going to be a reveal that it was Cadence.
Oh, right, yeah.
Because just because that man could just be a hired gun, because there's supposed to be four in the cell. Mm-hmm. So I thought we were going to get the reveal that Cadence was the villain, and maybe like that might happen, but it just seemed really weird. Like that they've got all four, and the fourth one was just an unnamed guard on
the
door.
I quite like the head of MI5 being a villain. Yeah. I mean, that has actually happened in reality. see the Cambridge spies. But the fact that James Bond just blows his head off actually after shattering his spine, we get another one of those disgusting X-ray images from the first one. I will just bring up at this point, though, I think we're finished with villain, yeah?
Yeah.
The art did not set my world alight, unlike in the first
one.
And actually, I was quite confused during some of the action sequences this time, which I wasn't.
There was a colouring error that really annoyed me.
Okay.
There's a scene where that Bond is in a car chase, and we see Bond get into a black car, and on the next page, the car is white. And I know it's supposed to be reflections, like the sun reflecting on the car, but it's really off-putting. Mm. And I had to turn the page and go,
I wasn't sure which car he was in, to be honest.
But then, yeah, so Jason Masters is the artist and Guy Major does the colouring. I don't think the penciling and inking is as good, which is what Masters would do, is a previous arc. And I think to do 12 comics in a row is a big ask. Not many people can keep up with that schedule. And I think to keep up with the schedule, and we already know from what I said at the start, he hit his deadlines. To carry on with his schedule, he just did a lesser job.
Yeah.
It looked scratchier to me, the art did. So I think he did, because there was no fill-in artists, not even like, sometimes you get an issue where someone else will do a few pages. There was also, I don't know if you caught it, there was a whole sequence which worked narratively because it's a flashback, but where he reused the same panels.
Panels. It was basically the whole page.
Yeah. From one issue to the next. I think it was issue 11, he used a whole couple of pages from issue 10, and he added one more panel at the end.
Yeah, that was it.
I thought the colours were still good, but like I said, there was that colouring issue. One where I do think we have to talk about like MVP for art is the covers, which are done by Dom Reardon, are fantastic. The one I love the most is issue 7, the first one, which is the one where Bond's standing on the gun. It feels like it feels like open title sequence for a movie. 100%. Yeah.
I did like the train one because I love trains. So the contextual note I promised earlier, there is a sequence that takes place, and it could have been so much more exciting than it was. There is a sequence that takes place in a real life location, which is a box tunnel.
Is that real then?
It was built by Isambard Kingdom Brunel.
Oh, so the Parkhead Viaduct.
So built the Great Western Railway. And it was actually completed in 1841, still in operation today. And true to this comic, it was used as a munitions store during the Second World War and subsequently during the Cold War.
Oh, okay.
So
you see him, like, I like that scene where he, like, you see him go into the tunnel and stuff.
Yeah, but I thought that cover
of
James Bond looking like he's in the Wild West with an old-fashioned steam train. Which is not actually in the issue.
There is a steam train,
it's a different train. Trust me, I'm a train geek. It's a different train. And that really lively cover art. And actually, that whole box tunnel sequence was just so dim.
Yeah.
You actually, there was nothing visually exciting
like four people
in there. Apart from the splash page of the trains
got,
in silhouette,
like,
you didn't see anything.
Killed by the sleepers when the bombs went off and splintered them. Also, is that a real thing? Like, does the government have a secret cache of steam trains for in case a nuclear pulse goes off and we can't use our trains?
That's complete nonsense.
Because that seems ridiculous. Like, surely you wouldn't have to rely on steam trains.
I mean, it's a cool idea, but no, it's complete nonsense.
Yeah. But other than that, other than the covers, I thought the art was a massive step down from the first one. Obviously, the artist is really capable of really good work, but it's just the monthly schedule. And I think we will see, as we go forward, that Dynamite realise that and they do 6-issue arcs with the artist and change the artist more regularly so they can got some catch-up time. Or what they might do is they throw these miniseries out, so you might have a couple of issues of the next one and they'll start to miss a month of publication, but they'll throw the Phoenix Writer out so the artist can catch up. Because this artist, you could tell the artist was rushing. Some bits just looked bad. So I would say that. So
we have to give it a rating.
Well, we remember our rating scale is we're rating them as what's our favourite to what's our least favourite. So for me, I'm going with number one, Varga, number two, Edelon so far.
If we were doing it out of 10, are we doing that? Go there?
I would give this a 5.
I would have gone with 6 for Varga and this 4.
Yeah, I'd go not, 6 and 5.
The big problem for me is the Bond character. Yeah. You can have a, you know, even, let's be honest, Ian Fleming's Diamonds Are Forever is not a brilliantly plotted novel, but you have a brilliant character in that novel, and so many other pleasures.
Yeah, like that whole scene when they go to
the sulfur baths.
No.
When the training, the
Wild West town.
Yeah, and, I'm just so, I'm desperately hopeful that in the next, the subsequent writers, they get the character better and they put him in the right kind of stories.
Yeah.
I'm not about, you know, you always have to follow the Bond formula. I love it when people subvert the formula. This is not subverting the formula. This is not understanding the formula.
Yeah. I tend to agree. And I get the feeling that he likes to tell his own stories. But obviously, you make more money and sell more things when you write licensed properties, because his X-Men wasn't very X-Men either.
Right.
So I'm just jotting down.
And this again is a further justification for me for never ever wanting like an auteur to be in charge of James Bond stories, because they believe they're better than the material. And you do have to tell a James Bond story with a James Bond character.
I think you get his weird politics. I'm not just talking about his sexual politics, although that comes through, but you get that weird thing, like that thing that you mentioned about the guns.
The gun, like, a mentally ill person.
But also, like, but he's a transhuman.
Bond wouldn't say that.
So he sees augmenting with guns. That's why, like, the CIA always use the same gun. That's why they use the same gun, because of...
Yeah, good point.
Because he's a transhuman.
Mm.
So, not a transsexual, but, like, he's a transhuman.
Transgender person.
Yeah, he...
Transsexual. He's still used by some members of the trans.
He's not transgendered, but, like, he believes that, like, we will only reach our true capacity when we merge with technology.
Mm.
So, yeah. We did have some comments from a listener about the last issue and this one as well, which I thought I'd read them. Mm. Let me get in my notes. It's from Samo25 on Instagram. He said, "Hi, Anthony. Just read Edelon and thought it was better than Varga. I agree with what was said on the podcast that the violence Bond uses is too much. The torture scene with Bond and Tanner definitely was not needed. Mm. I'm not quite sure I liked the ending. I'm not sure Bond would have been as cold as to say no to Harkwood. But then again, he was intending to kill many people just for money. Overall, I thought it was a good story and enjoyable to read. I also like how they've made the characters much more diverse, even down to the IT tech person at MI.
Yeah, she was the best character.
Yeah, she was fun. I hope
that almost preempts kind of where Kim Sherwood's gone with the Q branch.
Aisha and...
Ibrahim.
Ibrahim, AI.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that is it for this one. Next, we will be doing Hammerhead.
I think I need to read this one quite quickly to kind of almost take away the bad taste in my mouth from this one.
Yeah, so Hammerhead is the next chronological book that came out in 2016, 2017. And it is by Andy Diggle and illustrated...
Sorry, Andy Diggle.
Andy Diggle, yeah.
What a great name.
And
that could definitely be like a Bond boy name.
And Mr. Diggle. Art by Luca Casalaguida, I can't pronounce that. But Andy Diggle has done work for DC and Marvel. He's also worked with Guy Ritchie and done stuff on there. So he's a big sort of writer in the big two comic book series. Started off as another British person, started off writing for Judge Dredd, as lots of people do, and then Marvel and DC most recently.
Okay.
So, yes.
That's promising.
That's the next one. So if you want to read along with us, Hammerhead by Andy Diggle, and that is Dynamite Comics, and that started to be published in 2016, 2017. Six issues again.
Bring it on.
So if you've got thoughts about this one or the one we're reading next, get in touch with us. You can get us on all of the social medias at License to Queer, and you can just send messages to me directly. I'm at Remy LeBeau on X and Remy LeBeau _UK on Instagram, because someone beat me to Remy LeBeau.
How dare they?
How dare they? I keep looking to see if he ever gives up his
account. And just in case you don't know who Remy LeBeau is, because there will be people listening to this who are just Bond fans and not Marvel fans.
Remy LeBeau is a superhero Gambit from the X-Men who throws exploding playing cards, and he's one of my favourite characters in all
of fiction. Quite a James Bondy character in some
he's
ways.
He's a thief, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Infiltrates
he
places.
Could, yeah, he could work with James Bond. Mm. So yeah, thank you for listening again. We'll be back next month with the next episode of License to Queer presents James Bond's comic book capers.
That's really, really long.
Yeah, we just put like it in letter form.
That's almost like Albert R. Broccoli's Eon Productions, you
presents,
know, presents
Ian Fleming's James Bond.
In, yeah.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service. Cool. Thank you guys for listening. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.